Well, it's good to see you guys. My name is Matt, and I'm one of the pastors here. And again, we just want to welcome you if you're here visiting. I hope you feel right at home with us. We are just genuinely glad that that you've chosen to be here with us this morning. And I have to start by just giving an update about last week. If you weren't here last Sunday, it's a little bit difficult for me to totally catch you up in just a couple of minutes, but I'm going to try, because last Sunday was a significant milestone for us and for the life of our church. For me, last Sunday was, it was right up there, maybe second to the Easter Sundays that we've had together. It's just one of the high point Sundays for me. We talked about our recent partnership with Food for the Hungry, a Christian nonprofit working around the world. In particular, we're going to be working with them in Nicaragua, in Central America. And as a church, and we explained all this, but just to summarize, we have committed to partnering with Food for the Hungry, also they go by FH, for the next 8 to 10 years. And we're going to be working in a village in Nicaragua called Calatu. So working through Food for the Hungry to help the kids there, to build relationships, to learn from them, and to really do what we can as a church to help them out of extreme poverty. And FH is an amazing organization. They do this in really empowering, sustainable, honoring ways to them. One of the pieces of that involves us, this local church body, sponsoring, to begin with, 95 kids from Calatu, from this village. And here are some of their pictures. We explained it last week. If you missed last Sunday, and you are ever going to be inclined to go online and listen to a message, and let's just say hypothetically you're going to do that one time and never again, please make it that last Sunday. Please listen to last Sunday. I'm passionate about this because I want everyone to have an opportunity to get on board with this. This is an opportunity for all of us to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. If I could get away with it, I would just say what I said last Sunday again. And then maybe one more time again next week, just to make sure everyone has had a chance to hear this. But I won't do that. I'm so excited to let you know that last Sunday, together, we committed to sponsoring 74 of those 95 kids. That's incredible. That is incredible. So I want to say thank you for your generosity. I'm so encouraged by this. I'm blown away. FH, Food for the Hungry, they're incredibly thrilled by this as well. And I know several of you left last Sunday, wanting to think and pray about sponsoring a child. So we have 21 kids left from this village, and we're going to be taking trips, and you'll hear more about this, but 21 kids waiting to be sponsored. The information, the packets are back at the connection table, so if you want to stop by, and probably some of you did that before the service, or you can do it now, because this is more important than anything I'm going to say, so feel free to stand up and to walk back there to the table. Now, of course, getting these kids sponsored, all 95 kids, it's about the relationship that we're building with them. And again, you'll have the opportunity over the next several years to go visit them in the village of Calatu. But I don't know if anybody else thinks about things like this, but 95 kids sponsored at $35 a month, that's roughly right about $40,000 a year going to this one village to help, again, their poverty, help the children, and ultimately the whole village. And I mentioned last week that we give 10% of all the money that we receive from the offering. We give that directly to local and global missions, and right now that's about $50,000 a year, which means that although the money for the sponsorships doesn't pass through our books because FH handles all that administratively, we effectively doubled our missions giving in pretty much one Sunday, which is, I think that's amazing. It's amazing. And of course, it's not just about the money. This is about the way that I think God wants to change hearts and lives, to bring people hope. And so my prayer and my hope is that we could have all 95 kids sponsored by the end of today. That would be incredible, and we just give God thanks. Next week, we're going to be starting a new series called In Context. And so each week for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at some well-known passages of Scripture, some pretty well-known verses. You may know some of them. But they're verses that are often taken out of context. So they get sort of quoted and thrown around, and you hear them from time to time, often taken out of their, the immediate surrounding context, or even the historical, what was going on historically, that context when it was written. And so what happens if we're not careful, we end up making some of these famous verses mean something they don't actually mean, Or we miss the fuller picture, the fuller implications that what we could get, what they're really getting at. And so I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a fun series. And again, that starts next week. Today, we are going to look at some scriptures that relate directly to Mother's Day, which seemed appropriate and good to me. In fact, some of you, that's why you're here this morning. Others of you, like, well, you know, the one thing your mom wanted was for you to come to church with her this morning. And so you're here. I mean, come on, what are you going to say to that, right? But we want mothers here to be encouraged. We appreciate you. We honor you. You are incredible, and we value you so much. Whenever we have a Sunday like this, I like to try, if possible, to broaden it just a bit, to sort of widen the audience or the application. And so we want moms to be encouraged, and I want to challenge everyone else here, so we're going to try to do both things. Exodus chapter 20. This is a famous chapter in the Bible. Anyone know why? It lists something. Yep, I heard somebody say it. In the front row, bonus points. It's the Ten Commandments, like the famous Ten Commandments given by God to the Israelites while they're wandering in the desert. They just come out of Egyptian slavery, Egyptian captivity for 400 years, and God is leading them to the Promised Land. And so he gives them these Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai along with the rest of the Old Testament law, and it's God's way of shaping them, of forming them into a people. He's giving them an identity, and he's saying, you know, if you want to experience my blessing, if you want to be successful, as you go into this land you're about to enter, then here's what I want your life to look like. And in the middle of that, the fifth commandment is this, and you've probably heard this before, and I bet you can guess which one it is. Exodus 20, verse 12, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Now, right away, we tend to hear this as a kid's commandment, don't we? Like, if you grew up in church, Sunday school, it's like a children's church. This is like a coloring page, isn't it? Right? It's like, you know, don't talk back to your parents and eat your vegetables and that kind of a thing. And we would kind of admit, you know, the other nine commandments, those seem like they're written more for adults. But this is like the children's commandment that got sort of snuck in there, but nothing really in there for us. Is sort of how many of us look at this. But as we're going to see, the fifth commandment, this is actually primarily written for grown-ups. And of course, kids can benefit and they can apply this as well. But we'll get to that. You'll notice in the fifth commandment, there are no footnotes. None. There are no, there's no exception clause, which raises some challenges for us, especially those of us who've had terrible experiences at the hands of our parents. And I don't want to belittle that in any way at all. So as we begin wrestling with this, and what does this mean to apply this as grown-ups, which is most of us here, and by the way, if you're wondering, this is not just an Old Testament thing. Jesus actually brings this up and has some things to say about this in the New Testament as well. As we think, though, about how do we apply this today for you know, we're not nine, as we think about that, all you have to do is think about your situation and the people you know. You think about this for 30 seconds and you realize there's some emotional complexity to this, isn't there? Like for some of us, there's some real, ooh, I don't know, what's this going to mean? There's some issues for some of us. In a lot of ways, it's easier for me to address like hot topic, difficult social or political issues than it is to take seriously what it means as adults to honor our parents. Because our parents hit so close to home. This is really, really personal. This touches on something really deep for all of us. I mean, what other relationship cuts so close to the heart? And so for each one of us, our parents, or if you were adopted, the people who you call mom and dad, our parents have such a huge gravitational pull on our lives, don't they? I mean, there's such a significant force in shaping who we are today. And so depending on your experience with your parents, one or both or lack thereof, we all hear different things when we hear this commandment to honor our father and mother. No two of us have the same family configuration, the same family of origin, the same patterns, challenges, pains. No two of us have the same joys and blessings associated with family. I mean, many of you have great parents, and so this is relatively easy. There's not a lot of tension in this for you. But some of you have had really bad parents, to put it mildly. I was talking with someone a few years ago, a woman who literally felt like her life was in danger because one of her parents. And so there are some incredibly difficult things wrapped up into this for some of us. And I know this can be difficult. Some of you perhaps have lost your parents, like one or both. And if you've lost your mother, I can't imagine. I mean, Mother's Day being an especially challenging day for you every year. Maybe you come from a broken home. Maybe you have a good relationship with mom, but not dad, or vice versa. All that to say, it is one thing to apply this commandment when you're 10. It's another thing to apply it when you're like 40. And so I want to speak somewhat generally this morning. I recognize, again, you hear me saying there are extreme situations and there are exceptions. And last time I checked, I wasn't a family psychologist. So we're going to speak somewhat generally kind of to what might be more of the majority of us here in this room. But all that to say, if there are parts of this that you feel like because you're in one of the extremes, this may not apply or may apply differently for you. And so I want to give you freedom to think that way. I don't want anyone leaving here kind of unnecessarily burdened because you've got this commandment and then you've got the reality of your family. Does that make sense? Because there are other passages that kind of speak about wisdom and toxic relationships and things like that. All right. Now, there is something really important going on here. I don't know if you know this, but even with the ordering of the Ten Commandments, this is actually done very intentionally. If you read through the list, you find that the first four commandments are all about our relationship with God. You know, so don't commit idolatry. Worship God and God alone. Don't have any other gods before him. Don't misuse God's name. So the first four are about God. The last six are all about our relationships with each other. Now, which one is Exodus 20:12? I have to keep saying it. It's the fifth. It's the fifth commandment. Meaning, it is in the pivotal position as the commandments shift in a focus on God to a focus on how do we treat other people. Jesus, at one point in the Gospels, is asked to give his opinion on the most important commandment. And Jesus sums it up this way. In Matthew 22, he says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." You see what he's doing there? He's just restating the outline of the Ten Commandments in the entire law in general. The commandments, Jesus says, are all about loving God and loving your neighbor as yourself. And in the Ten Commandments, honoring our parents comes first, before any of our other relationships. This is where the commandments transition from God to neighbor. And commentators speculate on this, but one of the reasons they come up with is this. Our parents are simply our first and closest neighbors. I mean, love God and love your neighbor, starting with your mom and dad. Because before anything else, before you are anything else, before you have a relationship with anyone else, you are first someone's son or daughter. Now, we need to talk about this word honor. You'll notice it doesn't say obey. It doesn't say obey your parents. And the middle schoolers are like, yes, see? Mom, Pastor Matt said, okay, calm down. Calm down. Pastor Matt did not say you don't have to obey your parents. And there's a place for that. We're going to get to it briefly, but there's a place for obedience if you're living with your mom and dad. And Paul is actually very clear about this in the New Testament. But here's the word honor. It's the Hebrew word transliterated. It's the Hebrew word kavod. In other places in the Old Testament where this verb shows up, it almost always is in reference to the weight or the heaviness of something. It means to acknowledge the weight of a thing. Now, that's not like get your dad a treadmill for his birthday, okay? This is something else, okay? Okay. In the Hebrew mind, weight is about significance. It means to respect, to defer, to acknowledge the significance of something. It means to acknowledge the sheer impact, in this case, that mom and dad or both, or one or the other, whatever, have had in your life. It means to treat someone with the respect that is due their position and their person. It means to acknowledge an authority. Commentators agree that the real point of the fifth commandment is not for kids. It's actually to make sure that adult offspring provide for their parents in their old age. So it's honor, not just obey, not just, okay, I won't talk back. Also, the word honor, kavod in Hebrew, it carries the notion of personal service. Again, tying into this, providing genuine care for elderly parents beyond just lip service. And I think it's worth noting that this is the only commandment with a promise associated. That God has liberated the Israelites through the Exodus. They're journeying toward their homeland, the promised land. They're not there yet. And God says, if you want to be blessed in this new land, then you will honor your father and mother. See, the fact that this is the only commandment with a promise associated, I think means that it holds special weight and blessing in God's eyes. The question is, what does this look like for us? One of the things that makes this commandment to honor our father and mother challenging, not only do we each have different circumstances and situations, but within our own circumstance, within that, our relationship with our parents changes over time. Have you noticed that? I hope so. You go through different seasons, you go through different stages. It's not the same relationship when you're 15 as it is when you're 50, I hope. And so I want to try to walk through some of these stages again. I'm out of my depth here. I'm admitting that up front. So thank you for grace. Thank you for margin. Some of the stages, and again, to simplify a very complex thing, there's more overlap here than what I'm going to kind of indicate or illustrate. It's not as linear, and so this happened. You get it, right? Okay. In the first stage, we're speaking broadly, you're a baby, you're a young child, and to you, your parents are basically God, right? Because you scream and you cry and magically food shows up in front of you. Your diaper just gets changed. I mean, your parents are the filter through which you experience the whole world. In fact, they kind of are your whole world. You depend on them for everything. And so in the first stage is where we learn to obey them to avoid consequences. And most of that, right, is for our own good because we don't know how the world works and the dangers and why it's important to look both ways before we cross the street. And so our parents, you know, keep us alive in this stage. But then we get a little bit older and something happens starting around in middle school, continuing into adolescence, into the later teenage years, where you are beginning what psychologists call the process of self-differentiation. Kind of a big word. But it is healthy and it is necessary. It means you're beginning to form your own sense of self, your own sense of identity as an individual who is separate from your parents, but also still connected to them in some ways. And so you're not completely independent yet. You still need mom and dad, but you're growing in independence. And so it's in this stage, and you can see where the trouble starts to brew a little bit, right? You start having some run-ins, some conflicts with your parents, some battles. Anyone remember that? Yeah. Yes, we do. Some of you, in fact, are right in the middle of this right now at home. In fact, interestingly enough that I bring this up because just this morning, getting ready for church, how did he know? I'm just good like that. But you begin having your own thoughts and your own notions of how your life should go. Kind of have your own picture, and sometimes that encounters another very powerful force in your life, that of your parents. And so you have your own ideas about what time you should be allowed to come home or when you should be allowed to start dating, and you get the whole, well, why can't I, and why can't, because I said so, right? And it dawns on you in this stage that your parents, they don't know anything at all, and you actually know everything. This is when, because you're developing your own identity, this is when your parents begin having a unique capacity to totally embarrass you. Like, presumably, your dad has always had the same cheesy sense of humor, like, the whole time. It's just, it never bothered you before. But then you get to a place where the dad jokes begin eliciting eye rolls and I'm begging you, please don't humiliate me in front of my friends, right? I can't, my kids are just now getting to the stage where they can understand, like, you know, puns, which is like prime time. It's my prime time. I'm ready to go, you know? You know, what time did the man go to the dentist? Tooth hurty, okay? So we're just getting there. I can't wait. So, but in these early stages, I would submit to you that honor looks like obedience. I mean, Paul says in Colossians 3:20, he repeats it in Ephesians 6, but he says, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. One of the reasons, perhaps, why the fifth commandment isn't more specific on the obey part is because that would have been so obviously implied in that culture. No one would have questioned that. But Paul goes ahead and says it. In other cultures, this makes perfect sense, especially in more Eastern cultures. I mean, how could you not honor and obey your parents? And God used them to bring you into this world. But we live in a Western culture where prior to like the 1960s, this kind of made more sense to us. But then the 60s happened, and I'm not, please hear me, not suggesting we need to go back to the 1950s. That's not what I'm saying. But one of the things that came out of the 60s was this anti-authority, anti-government, anti-establishment, institution, you know, kind of anti-everything mindset. And young people realized, you know, they really couldn't get their hands on, like, government, couldn't get their hands on, like, big institutions, but they could rebel against their parents. And so in the 60s and 70s, it became culturally popular, in vogue, to rebel against authority in general and against parental authority in particular. We sort of idolize rebellion. And I know that even saying this makes me sound kind of old, but like, when was the last time you saw in a sitcom or show parents portrayed as like responsible, wise people who from the wealth of their experience can teach you how to live, right? I don't know. I mean, what you usually have is like doofus parents, like Homer Simpson dad. I mean, in our culture today, I mean, you can't hardly find a film, or when's the last time you heard a band singing this refrain, honor your father and mother? Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Never. We don't realize the importance of the parent-child relationship in forming who we are as people, in shaping how you then and I later in life respond to authorities. Like they're our first neighbor and our first authority, and that kind of comes into play. God says, I want you to honor your father and mother and start by obeying them. And then as your independence increases over the years, respect increasingly grows in the place where, to begin with, was just obedience. And part of adolescence is you're going to have your own ideas. You're going to disagree with your parents, but you still need to respect them. You're not a child, but you're not an adult. And so you get more freedom than you had when you were little, but not as much freedom as you'll have when you're 30. I mean, here's the good news. Once you're out of the house, you don't have to obey your parents. Yes, right? What happens is obedience, and like blind obedience when you're a kid, a small kid, I mean, that gradually turns into respect as we get older. Honor looks like respect. It means we value and esteem our parents, that we acknowledge their significance in shaping us, in forming who we are. Honoring your parents in the later stages, it's seeking counsel, which didn't mean a lot to me when I was a teenager, but now that I'm in my mid-30s, Liz and I seek the counsel of our parents like all the time. We probably drive them crazy. And just important side note, we happen to be fortunate enough to have, wise and God-honoring, God-loving parents. Okay, so far for most of us, nothing new, right? Nothing too major. We kind of got it, you know, obey, respect. And maybe some of you, this is where you are, and this is what you need to be reminded of. But again, I realize we're talking here to adults. And here is where it starts to get a little more complicated. Here is where we get into some stages where maybe, I think in all likelihood, nobody's ever prepared us for. And so as you move into complete independence, and you know, you're on your own. And this is kind of happening later and later in our culture. right? Because adolescence is extending in a lot of ways into like our 20s for many of us. And sometimes there are well-intentioned false starts, right? The boomerang children, and that happens. But for most of us at some point, we go to college or we get a job, or for some of us, we get married or we get our first house or apartment. We start to have truly our own separate life. And ideally, you begin then cultivating more of a peer relationship with mom or dad, although never quite that, right? Because they're always your parents, no matter how old you get. Like, you're someone's son or daughter forever. My mom, she still calls me Matthew sometime, which you are not invited to do. I think there are times when it hits her and she still thinks of me as like her little boy. You're someone's son or daughter forever. But what happens is we begin, you know, complete independence, is we begin to come to grips with our family of origin in new ways. And boy, do we have the language to think about that. We're able to identify the patterns and the behaviors, the things you see in your parents you didn't see until you got a little bit of distance. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Or maybe for some of us, it's when we get married and you start navigating the holidays and you gain a new perspective. Some of us, it's like in therapy. I don't mean that funny, but like you're dealing with issues stemming from mom and dad. Some of you, you are amazed you even survived your childhood, now that you think about it, let alone you became like a functioning, well-adjusted adult. In this stage, we often get a little more critical. We're able to find the words to describe everything they did wrong. We're able to see in them everything that you don't want to be true of you. Again, you're becoming your own person, right? In the 20s, 30s, I don't know, different for all of us. And part of that is pushing back against what you know. And what do you know better than anything else? Your family of origin. So you do everything you can not to turn into your parents. Does anyone remember this phase? Okay. Yeah, like you and you alone are determined to be the one person in history to escape the gravitational pull of your parents and become your own person. I read an article this week that said that 32, age 32 is the magic number. They had factors and the averages and all this. It's the magic age when you cross a line from rebellious youth to a younger copy of your mom or dad. How does that make you feel? At some point, you realize what you vowed would never happen is happening. You're more like your parents than you want to admit. Partly, you're watching them turn into their parents as they get older, and then you see it in you. You have their same mannerisms. You use the same tone of voice. You find yourself, for example, you know, talking to your kids, saying the exact same things your parents said to you. And you realize you are doomed. You're doomed. But then sometime, again, late 20s, 30s, 40s, it's often when or if you have kids, but not always, you enter a new stage in your relationship with your parents where you start to see them differently. You gain a new appreciation for what they went through raising you. You start to realize in a new way they know a lot of things that maybe you don't know. And perhaps with this comes a little more empathy. And yes, you're a smarty pants, and yes, you have more education than them, but and yes, you can see their weaknesses and their hang-ups and their foibles, and you know them better than they know them themselves. But you begin to see them in a new way, or maybe for the first time, as people. As people who are perhaps trying their best with what they had been given, and also shaped by their parents, by their family of origin. You develop a little more humility. You begin to hope that your kids, again, if you have them, you hope that however it is, you must be unintentionally screwing them up. Like whatever it is, because you're doing something, that they're going to be talking about you years later to their counselor. Okay, that is happening right now. You begin to hope that whatever that is, you know, I hope my kids will give me some grace later. Like, I hope my kids won't be as critical of me as I've been in a certain season critical of my parents. And by the way, we all come from dysfunctional families. Did you know that? That there's no such thing as a perfectly healthy, functional family? That your parents aren't perfect because no one is perfect. And you might think at this point, well, surely in the Bible there's some really healthy, functional families, some good role models. Not really, right? Maybe a handful of the ones we don't know very much about. You know, some of them are okay. But a lot of the parents in our Bible, in the Bible, they make our parents seem like the model and the picture of health. And so to honor your father and mother in this stage means we need to adopt a posture of grace. And again, I don't want to diminish the fact that, you know, if you've had abusive parents or toxic stuff going on there, I mean, this is why this is hard to talk about. It's hard to talk about, you know, what does it look to honor parents who haven't behaved in honorable ways? And I don't think I have the answers for that. Perhaps some of us are still working through just kind of forgiveness issues as it relates to mom or dad. But there's a larger group of us here, I would suspect, in this stage, who are just maybe a little bit too idealistic. Just maybe. Our expectations are a little bit too high. We're a tad bit too critical. I mean, there are some of us here, if like Jesus was your parent, you'd be like, I don't know, I didn't like his beard. I didn't really care for that. Right? I mean, you would find something. Some of us were expecting our parents, more of our parents than we ever expect of ourselves. And so maybe we need to give a little grace and to say, you know what, my parents aren't perfect people because no one is perfect. I need to extend to them the grace that I want other people to give me. And the grace that, by the way, I tend to give to everyone else but them. Honoring our parents in this stage means that we express our gratitude. I'm really glad that we have a day like this, Mother's Day. We have to honor our moms. But of course, honoring our mothers, honoring our fathers, it goes beyond just a day a year. And so one of the ways we do this is we find ways to express our gratitude for what we can be thankful for. You know, maybe there are things that you wanted from your mom that you didn't get, but she did raise you to know and to love Jesus. And tell her thanks for that. Call her up, send her an email. Maybe your dad wasn't like emotionally present or, you know, spiritually kind of involved, but he did provide for you. And there's a lot of kids who don't even get that. And so sometimes we actually help our parents be more honorable by honoring them in the ways they've already been honorable. It's an encouragement. It's not saying I honor everything you've ever done. But here are the things I'm grateful for. I want to articulate what I appreciate about you. And maybe, just maybe, that cracks the door open to get to some other stuff later. I don't know. But it's saying, I at least want to see if there's an opportunity to get this moving in the right direction. And so obedience, respect, grace, and gratitude. Now there is one more important stage to honoring our mother and father. And I don't think I've ever heard this ever talked about in church before, so let's do it. What happens for a lot of us and our parents is they and we get older, right? They start to face some challenges of aging. And you find that you have to care for them in ways you've never had to care for them before. And this is where some of you find yourselves. Some of you, you're in the difficult, challenging season of caring for aging parents, and you also have like teenagers at home or young adult children who are still in that process of self-differentiation. So maybe you're in this right now. It's what sociologists call the sandwich generation. It's like, wait, your kids are raised. You did it. Isn't it party time? Like, isn't it time just for fun and travel and do the things that you want to do? Often around 50, people who are, again, usually at their peak of earning capabilities, they may find it necessary to provide emotional and economic support to both young adult and elderly family members at the same time. And again, many of us, I mean, we know logically it's coming, it just is different than what we thought it was going to be. And so to honor your father and mother, it means that eventually we demonstrate care for them. Again, this is primarily why the fifth commandment was given. In ancient times, they didn't have Social Security or retirement or government, you know, structures. They didn't have long-term care facilities. And so as you got old, you needed your kids to look after you. And the assumption was that they fed you, they clothed you, they housed you, they bathed you, they looked after you. I mean, basically, they took care of you when you could no longer take care of yourself. Kind of like you did for them when they were young. And it kind of comes full circle. The fifth commandment is primarily for adult children with elderly parents. That was the responsibility of children and grandchildren. Now look, I realize we live in a completely different culture and age, and there's different systems and structures in place, and some of us, we live in different parts of the country. Like, we don't all live within a 5-mile radius of our entire extended family, and I understand there are many things that are different about our culture. But I think in a lot of ways, we need to be reminded of this. Much of the attention of our culture is directed toward youth. Like, we live in a culture that worships youth. We tend to look down on people who are older because they can't benefit us. I mean, the general rule being, we want you around as long as your production, as long as your consumption doesn't exceed your, how am I saying that? As long as your production exceeds your consumption, including the time and energy required for your care. I personally don't like to think about my parents, grandparents getting older for a lot of reasons. One is it reminds me of my own mortality. You kind of want to avoid that. Mortality, by the way, being the chief cause of aging, right? At a fundamental level. Yeah. I know this means something different for each one of us, and some of us are right in this stage, others maybe not quite yet. I want to show you how seriously Jesus took this idea. He actually talked about this. In Mark chapter 7, Jesus continued. He's talking to religious leaders. He says, "You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. For Moses said," quoting the Ten Commandments, "honor your father and mother. And," quoting another place, "anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is Corban," we'll come back to that, "that is devoted to God, then you no longer let them do anything for their father or mother. Thus you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down, and you do many things like that." And so apparently the religious leaders had this kind of tradition, this loophole called Corban, where you could take your possessions and you could set them aside and say, this is all devoted to God. And in doing that, you could get out of your, and I'm not sure where it came from or what all is happening there, but in doing that, they were at least getting out of their obligation to care materially for their parents. And then they were encouraging other people, hey, you got that money? Call it Corban. And then you don't have to, see? Sorry, mom and dad, I gave it to God. You're out of luck. Jesus calls them out in front of everyone. He reminds them of the fifth commandment. He says, you have a divine obligation to care for your parents. And you pride yourself on being so holy and so spiritual. You're not even doing the basics. Have you heard of the Ten Commandments? See, that would be insulting to them. And Jesus doesn't just talk about this. There's a scene in the Gospels where he demonstrates this in such a clear, unmistakable way. In John 19, verse 25, it says, "Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby," that's John, "he said to her, 'Woman, here is your son.'" And in Greek, the term woman, that doesn't denote any disrespect. It's not woman. "Woman, here is your son. And to the disciple, here is your mother.' From that time on, this disciple took her into his home." And Jesus is hanging on the cross in excruciating pain. And he looks down, and who's at the foot of the cross? His mother. And standing next to him or standing nearby is his disciple, John. And Jesus looks at his mother, and he looks at John, and then he says to him, "Take care of my mom. I want you to take care of my mom for me." Jesus instructs John to assume his role in providing for his mother in her old age. One more. Paul, later on, he's writing to a church being led by a young man named Timothy. And this is what Paul says. He says, "Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn, first of all, to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to God. Paul says, you want to know what like your religion looks like in practice? Take care of your parents, especially your mother, if she's a widow. And then I think Paul stops writing and he goes, I don't know if I've made this very clear. I wonder if I could add anything to make this a little more clear. Oh, I know. That was all. Just verse 8, Paul writes, anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Whew. Wow. So caring for our aging parents is both a privilege and a priority for Christian adult children. And I understand that making these decisions about how to best care for aging parents is really complex. I've observed some of this firsthand in my own family system and the care for my grandparents and a few years ago, my great-grandmother when she was living. And there's nothing easy about it. I mean, the decisions that you have to make and the doctor's appointments and the insurance papers and the care decisions you have to, I mean, it is incredibly complex. And we need to do this with respect and with honor. And within reason, the elderly person should have a say in the matter, right? Like their preferences taken into account. By the way, can I just go ahead and mention a little statistic here? Studies show consistently, and I've observed this both as a pastor and in, again, my own family system, studies show that the burden of caring for aging parents falls far more on adult daughters than it does on adult sons. Like it's a significant difference, and you could argue some of that may have to do, the gender difference may involve employment obligations, but that said, sons and daughters need to share in the responsibility so that it doesn't all fall on the women, so that they're not overly burdened in the process of giving care. And by the way, so that we can experience the rewards as well. And so to those of you in this stage, and you're doing the difficult work of providing care for a parent, I want to do something just a little bit different, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, but if you're in this stage as a son or daughter, or as a grandson or granddaughter, if you're in this stage of providing care emotionally, physically, financially, or you've been in this stage, you've already been through this stage. Again, I don't want to embarrass anyone, but if this is you, I want to invite you just to stand up for a moment. Would you just stand for just a moment? And if you're here and you're with your parents and they're 47, don't stand, okay? Yeah. Just look around for a minute. There's a lot of people in this room. Can we just put our hands together? That should be, I think, acknowledged. I think it should be celebrated. Yeah. Why don't we all stand? Let's all stand together. That's putting your faith, I'm going to let the band can come on up. That's putting your faith into action. It's demonstrating selflessness. And I just want to say to you guys who stood up, thank you for showing us what that looks like. Those of us who aren't quite there just yet. And I hope that you're encouraged this morning. And for all of us, what does it mean to honor your mother? What does it mean to honor your father? Not just your mother today, but beyond this day. Obedience, respect, grace, gratitude, and care. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, I pray that that you would help us to take this commandment seriously. This command that Jesus reaffirms and then clearly demonstrates that Paul couldn't be clearer about in writing to Timothy. Lord, help us in each of these stages and that we're in with our parents, and it's sometimes complicated and messy, and we're trying to navigate this. Help us in whatever stage that we're in to honor our parents well, to put that on display, that we could demonstrate to those around us what our religion, our faith looks like in practice. And Lord, for my brothers and sisters here who are in just extreme situations, in some exception type circumstances. Pray that you would give them wisdom, that you give them grace as they navigate this as well. Lord, thank you for our families. Thank you for the good things that have been instilled in us by our parents, by the people who raised us. We can be grateful for. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.